I did that too, but she knocked it over again. She emptied the container. Hey.
How was the trip?
Hey, bud.
I didn't even know where'd you go.
Colorado.
Oh, I know where you went. Yeah. Ezekiel 8. In verse, starting in verse 4, we're never going to get through this chapter, but...
You keep going backwards.
Well, shut up, Robert. Well, if you'd ever understand it, then we would... And behold, the glory of God, the glory of the God of Israel was there according to the vision that I saw on the plain. Then he said unto me, Son of man, lift up thine eyes now the way toward the north. So I lifted up mine eyes the way toward the north, and behold, northward at the gate of the altar, this image of jealousy in the entry. And he said furthermore unto me, Son of man, seest thou what they do, even the great abominations that the house of Israel committed here, that I should go far off from my sanctuary? But turn thee yet again, and thou shalt see greater abominations. Now, this image of jealousy toward the north, north is symbolically toward what we, what the flesh would consider evil. The things that came against Israel, you know, supposedly Gog and Magog and all that, it comes from the north to attack Israel. But the thing that is always at the north is the image of jealousy, and it's the jealousy of God that you would go any place other than Him for any of your need, for any of your sustenance, for any of the desire that you had. And that image of jealousy is so strong that the farther you get into this, the more sensitive you become to this image of jealousy, to how it grieves the heart of God every time that you go in your thoughts or in your actions to someone else other than Him for your needs. And when you do that, then God sees that as an abomination. When you lean on your own arm of understanding, when you lean on the arm of the flesh, when you get advice from people, when you make up a plan to solve a problem, when remember, every time that any kind of a need comes to you, it's the Holy Spirit seeing whether or not that you will be faithful to this image of jealousy. Are you going to lean? Are you going to do something else other than go to the Father for whatever your need is? You understand that?
What is it, like you set up an image that provokes Him to jealousy.
It provokes Him to jealousy.
Is it what you just said? Is it you set up an image that provokes God to jealousy, or is it an image that represents God?
Both. It's any image that you present. Any image that you is there, it provokes God to jealousy, but it is also the image of jealousy that is set up toward the north. It's both. In other words, he's still all and in all. Let's go. Let me show you.
This is why fornication is so bad.
Okay, and we have to go to verse 3 now. Don't say a word. And he puts... Don't laugh. Don't even smile. Don't chuckle. Well, it's not. It's this.
Yeah.
This is the problem right here. And he put forth the form of a hand and took me by a lock of mine head, and the Spirit lifted me up between the earth and the heaven and brought me in the visions of God to Jerusalem, to the door of the inner gate that looketh toward the north, where was the seat of the image of jealousy which provoketh to jealousy. Now, most people don't even know that that is there, because they just conduct their lives and they go around and they believe that God helps those that help themselves, and so the image of jealousy is not even seen. I mean, it's, your eyes are blinded so that you don't even see that. You don't even comprehend that God could be jealous. But this image of jealousy, once you've gone into this place, once the Spirit has taken you away from the natural into this place between the earth and the sky, or the earth and the heavens, then you, the image, it's this strange word, which, or the phraseology, it says, where was the seat of the image of jealousy which provoketh to jealousy. Does everybody understand or got a feel for it emotionally?
I know, but
what is it that you don't understand?
Well, I've just always thought, every time we study this, that this was something that represented that in me that pisses God off.
Well, but it's both. I mean, it's.
You said there must be heresy. That's the wrong motive on God's part.
It's, huh?
That's the wrong motive. He's feeling the wrong motive from God's part. He
right.
Said God hates you. He said he loves you.
But he's concerned about the image which provoketh the jealousy, and the image is—it's hard to comprehend this, but it's both that you are created by God, and God is all in all, and all your works have been wrought in Him, and yet those works provoke Him to jealousy. It's the image of jealousy which provoketh to jealousy. And the reason is it's taking you into a different dimension of life, where before you didn't even think this was even possible. How could anything I do provoke God to jealousy? You know, it's you're just a little being, a human being. But now you're beginning to look, instead of from the bottom up, you're beginning to look from the top down. And slowly but surely, this is an instrument by which God uses to transform you by the renewing of your mind. And the more sensitive you become to this image of jealousy, which provoketh the jealousy, the closer that you will be to the Father. And the more sensitive you will be to not do these crazy things which provokes Him to jealousy. That you begin to see even the slightest movement towards leaning on your own arm of understanding, or doing all of the other stuff that is just natural to you, it grieves you.
So is it like there's, childish words, but is it like there's this thing in the doorway that if I look toward the north, I will see, and if he looks, he sees, and there's an effect on him, and there's an effect on
image of jealousy which provoketh to jealousy. Got it?
Well, isn't it simple, just the way he said, thou shalt have no other gods before me?
Right.
And everything we do.
Right. This is just another.
Before him, and that's,
right. This is just. This is another way of looking at it. Okay, so this is all now, remember, this is all happening before you ever go into the wall. Into the door. This is external to the door.
this is something you can actually see.
Right.
If people point it out, it's like, yeah, sure, you know, I'm doing that.
So in a very real sense, this thing is between me and God.
Right. Then he said unto me, Son of man, lift up thine eyes now the way toward the north. So I lifted up mine eyes the way toward the north, and behold, northward at the gate of the altar, this image of jealousy in the entry, or in the doorway. He said furthermore unto me, Son of man, seest thou what they do, even the great abominations of the house of Israel committed here, that I should go far off from my sanctuary. Now, don't you see, we're saying that because of something that's going on in us at this point, whatever it is, then we say that it isn't finished, it isn't perfect, it isn't exactly as it should be, and so we, in effect, we cause him to go far off from his sanctuary, even to pray to him to change something. So this is the whole process that's going on. If this is part of the soul instead of what's going on deep inside, this is just soul stuff. All right? Okay, then he brought me to the door of the court, and when I looked, behold, a hole in the wall. We talked about that yesterday. Then he said unto me, Son of man, dig now in the wall. And when I had digged the wall, in the wall, behold, a door. Then he said unto me, Go in. And we talked all about that. And behold, the wicked abominations that they do here. So now there were abominations on the outward area. Now we're going in and seeing the wicked abominations internally that are deeper. So I went in and I saw, and behold, every form of creeping things and abominable beasts and all the idols of the house of Israel portrayed upon the wall round about. Now this is the whole process, the whole of your subconscious mind that has created you. God says, okay, it's time for all that to go. You got it? And there stood before them 70 men of the ancients of the house of Israel, and in the midst of them stood Jazaniah, the son of Shaphan, with every man his censer in his hand, and a thick cloud of incense went up. And he said unto me, Son of man, hast thou seen what the ancients of the house of Israel do in the dark, every man in the chambers of his imagery or his imagination? For they say, The Lord seeth us not, the Lord hath forsaken the earth. Again, every time that we think that we're in a position where it is not perfect to us, we don't see his perfection, then we have said to God, no matter what our words are, we have said to God, The Lord has forsaken the earth. Everybody understand that? How many times did you believe the Lord has forsaken the earth yesterday? If you did you repent of that? Every time that you looked, did you try to change something other than giving it to him, or did you provoke him to jealousy again? Okay? Maybe a better question is, was there ever a time yesterday when you didn't do that? Or as I used to say to Bojo when we went past all the forests, see all those trees, tell me which one you didn't commit fornication on. Everybody got this?
The one thing interesting about this is if you've ever experienced jealousy, it's one of the worst emotions there is. And realize that's what you're provoking in God.
You know, psychopaths have never... That's an experience I've never had, is jealousy, so I can't relate to it.
Sociopath,
not psychopath. Well, psychopath.
Psychopath.
I didn't say it was a good thing. What?
You were drinking when you said it.
What? All right. Now we're gonna go and see some more abominations. Are you ready? He said also unto me, Turn thee yet again, and thou shalt see greater abominations that they do. Now we're going to look at something different. And he brought me to the door of the gate of the Lord's house, which was toward the north. And behold, there sat women weeping for Tammuz. Tammuz is the resurrection god. Every single time that something has happened, most of the world that uses the name of Christ don't believe in Christ, they believe in Tammuz, and they put the name of Christ on Tammuz. Now what is Tammuz? He's the resurrection god, but what does that mean? Why are the women weeping for Tammuz? We've studied this 100 times. Huh? What does that mean? What does that mean to you? Well, many cultures do it differently, but yeah, he's the resurrection God. He keeps resurrecting. He keeps getting resurrected at different cycles of time.
If you feel bad enough, if you pay enough penance, then that will move God to fix them.
That's not really what this is about. Weeping for Tammuz. There's women in you. Part of that's been going on in here, that these women are weeping for Tammuz.
I wonder if they give me that answer.
Well, I want you guys
to admit it right off the bat. We don't know.
We
can't remember what you mean. I do remember that, you know, they've got that little flower that they're supposed to represent, you know, the most beautiful little flower, you know, you can think of. It comes back every year.
Remember I used to get on Buckner and some of his hot seats and I'd tell him that you have never believed in Jesus Christ, you've only believed in Tammuz. You remember that?
He's very mean.
Huh?
Yeah.
It was kind of intense, right?
I played a lot. One of the reasons things to me is to take you out of the moment of distance to be somewhere else.
But these women are doing it without you doing it. They're just doing it. They're just up there weeping for Tammuz. Remember? Remember it emotionally, though. Why would there be in all the ancient cultures a resurrection God?
Do I get anything?
You get a bowl of gruel.
You get a C in the test
for
taking this long to remember.
Well, I didn't
with so
know.
Many hints.
I sort of kept it. I didn't want to just jump in.
Let's just say it for the rest of
it. Well, if anything that you have hope in that isn't happening, therefore the women are weeping for that hope. And that's part of this subconscious activity that's going on. And if there's anything that you still hope for, then there are women weeping for Tammuz.
Now, because you can take that like every spring, everything comes back, so there's always hope. I mean, yeah, that's what you're thinking. So then you take that and put it on whatever it is you want to happen, and go, well, you know, things are bad, but there's always hope. And recurring thing instead of one singular resurrection period.
Right. Remember?
Story.
Remember Hymenaeus and Philetus were condemned because they said the resurrection was past already? You've got to see, you've got to come to this grip, you've got to hold on to this and know beyond knowing that His resurrection has made everything perfect, no matter what it appears to you. that you have been perfected forever, that you have all, you own all things, that all things exist for your purpose. There is no more illusions of there's no more, the Jebusites are gone from the land, the false hope. And once the false hope is gone from the land, then the women of Tammuz stop, there's no more Tammuz. Everybody understand this a little bit? Again, this is so endemic. It's like asking a fish to describe water, because your whole life is based on false hope. Everything about you, everything that has made you you, is based on false hope. Now, that's why we have to go into a new dimension of life. One in which wherever we look, we see Christ is all and in all. Wherever we look, we see it's finished. There's never again a thought that can enter into our mind by which we don't, you know, it isn't brought into captivity to the obedience of Christ. It is the understanding that we are already, that's why the scriptures say there are no more prophets. Why? Because all of us are seated under the wings of the cherubim, which is the oracle of God. There's nothing left. There's nothing left to happen. And everything in your mind, even the most sincere things, and that's where the women are weeping, is it's the sincere crap. It's really good stuff. I could see the women weeping for Tammuz in you. When I was just by your actions, by how you walk, by what you say, and that's what's so sad. You know, if I can see it, just think what God sees. Don't you see every one of these little things we're saying to the Father that the sacrifice wasn't enough? We need more. And this is just a million ways of revealing it deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper in us. And when we see this and when we understand it and when it becomes us, then we literally feel the heart of God. And our life is a different dimension. Everybody understand the women weeping for Tammuz? All right, let's go on to another one. Then he said unto me, hast thou seen this, O son of man? Turn thee yet again, and thou shalt see greater abominations. My God, my God. Now he brought me into the inner court of the Lord's house. This is where the candlesticks and the showbread are. Okay? He brought me into the inner court of the Lord's house, and behold, at the door of the temple of the Lord, between the porch and the altar, there were 25 men with their backs toward the temple of the Lord and their faces toward the east, and they worshipped the sun toward the east. Now that's a greater abomination from God's perspective than the weeping for Tammuz, or the images that are portrayed, or Saphon and his henchmen carrying their own censers. Why is the worship toward the east so evil? Why is looking toward the east so evil? It's because, again, at this core level of your being, you are denying the finishedness of God, and you're hoping for something better. You're hoping. You're looking towards the east that tomorrow will bring something better. Tomorrow will change you. Tomorrow will be... You know, that's why of all the cultures in the world, The Jewish day starts at sunset. Of all the cultures in the world, the Jewish New Year starts at the beginning of winter. Why? All the cultures in the world worship toward the east, because everything about the rising sun is what gives them the illusion of all the rest of the stuff. Tomorrow, tomorrow, tomorrow. And all of the sappy, ridiculous songs that people write that talk about this, that all of it denies the finished work of Christ. So we've got these guys up here that are, there's 25 of the 75, they're the same set, that are worshiping, they're causing you to look toward the east, look toward the sunrise instead of the sunset. Okay?
Yeah, because the Jews, they came in, everything was like
toward the west
of the way the temple was set up,
which was religion.
Yeah, it's the exact opposite of each. Oh, yeah, again, remember, no person in history has ever worshipped a false god, from their perspective. No person has ever worshipped an idol, from their perspective. They're always giving breath or importance to something that they think is important and good and proper. Now that, again, that's why every man prays. Your prayers are your thoughts. You pray 24 hours a day. You just pray to the stupid god. Every man worships. You worship what you give breath to. Every man sacrifices. You sacrifice to whatever your idol is. Every man tithes. You tithe to your chief god. It goes on and on and on. None of this is negotiable. Doesn't matter whether you call yourself a Christian or a Hindu or a Jew. That's all gone. There's no more Jew or Greek or bond or free or male or female. The labels are gone. I guess that's enough for today.
You know, looking at this, for the first time I had an idea of probably everything it talks about is in particularly defiling something that was going on in that part of the temple.
Oh man, yeah.
It's all connected. It's been so scary that I hadn't even thought about that until now. It's like, because it's, you know, in there and it's like,
yeah, every aspect.
I don't want to know anything more about that.
Well, it's witchcraft.
But it's got to be a perversion. Each step is like a perversion.
No, I know.
Weird.
What was it you used to say about the river or something that flows through the temple coming from the west and going towards the east?
Time itself flows through the New Jerusalem, through the temple.
Right.
And it flows from west to east. And everything goes out, everything comes in the west gate and goes out the east gate. And that's the movement of time through the temple.
And that's what Gehenna is on the outside.
And you go through outside the east gate is Gehenna, the valley of Hinnom, which is the dump. And as long as time exists, there will be a dump, and it's brimstone and fire. As soon as time is no more, then all of that goes. But only that which proceeded from the Father or from the New Jerusalem can return to the New Jerusalem. Flesh and blood can't inherit. And so all of the experiences that we have had and have as human beings are only for one singular purpose. They're the part of that. They're filling out the affliction that's lacking in the bride of Christ. And slowly but surely, that's happening in each part of us. It's happening all over the world. And what they experience, what they're going through, and as I said so often, whether it's Somalia or China or wherever, what they're going through, it's for us. And what we do with regard to all of, you know, we go pretty intense and feasts and all that and this kind of stuff. What we do is for them. And we don't think of ourselves any more important than anybody else. We just have to see what we're called to do and be faithful to it. It doesn't mean that what we are called to do, anybody else is called to do. That's their business. Everybody understand that? So we're not judging. We've been called, we've been taken or called one of a city and two of a family, and we've been brought to Zion. And there we've been given pastors and teachers that will feed us with his understanding. There are no words to express the gratitude that we should feel.
Something you said about prophets a while ago really hit me, how in time old prophets did speak into the future. But as you pertain in the fulfillment, there then the spirit of prophecy continues, so instead of forward and upward, now it's in you for God, not still for that future.
Right. Alrighty, I really pray you understand this and live it. Anybody response?
I feel really moved and feel really sick of my trips. Taking a pick like 13 years old or something, where I'm kind of snapped into something and then snapping out of it or snapped into something else. I'm so sick of beating up my head.
Good. That's what the preaching of the cross purpose is. Where's Darlene? Where's Ween? Is there school today? Why? Oh, is this where there are all these stupid petitions or whether they're really?
They wanted a whole week. You gave them away.
I didn't give them anything. I said, you're the problem.
But they didn't get it.
Yeah, exactly.
They didn't get their week.
No, not because.
That's because I said, whatever is all right with your son is all right with me. I didn't say it that way. I said, this is all right with me if it's all right with you. And then they took that as a weapon against your son. Are we going to get together for about the?
Maybe not this morning.
Okay, I'm ready. Whenever you are. But it's, you know,
there's great emphasis in other places of the country.
You need to say take a big guy.
Take a big guy. I think all cell phones should be destroyed. All cell phones.